Right,
I love it.
Yeah,
so I've started the recording, but
oh, okay.
Brilliant. I literally just did it. It's a warning to all that Peanut is in squeaky toy mode.
He's
so
beautiful.
Bonus. Yeah, it's so maddening. I thought he'd burst that one. That's why I gave him it. Because the last few times all I've heard is like a sort of. But now he's found. He seems to have found how to squeak it again. Yes. Episode 8.
Pyre. Yes.
Pyre.
Pyre.
It's not Pyre. Yeah, it's not
Pyre. You're rolling your R's. I can't.
It's not a woman called Pyre.
Pyre.
How would you say it? You two. Properly.
Pyre.
There's an R in it, yeah.
Pyre.
We're not fucking
not pirates. We're not pirates, Chris.
Yes, pyre. I mean, well.
Pyre. No, pyre. The episode's called Pyre.
You're in all the Disney Plus shows.
You can't kill my wife.
Okay. Right. Well, now that we've cracked up to start the show, let's see if we can bring it back to Santa. No, Peanut, I'm not playing. Yeah.
Okay, so
worth mentioning as well that Hamish is like really at a point of not sleeping where he's cracking up and talking about himself in the third person.
Hamish is indeed that.
So this is getting fun. But I have watched this episode twice, including half asleep, just watched it again, so hopefully I'm prepared and ready to go.
Beautiful.
So, handsome Belter and Belter looks a little bit like younger Miller.
When you showed us last time and you said he looks like Miller, I was like, he doesn't. But seeing him in motion, he does look like a young Miller. I see it.
That's the same. It's the haircut, really, and maybe a bit of the nose.
I think it's the face, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Inyoloda, you're saying we all look the same?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you understood this correctly. Well done.
Well done. Okay, where do we start?
Have you thought of shaving the sides of your head, Chris? That'd be quite interesting with that hair, you know.
It'd be kind of interesting.
Don't do it. No,
do it. That would look cool.
I don't know. It's a lot of hair to grow. This is like 2 years of work.
Ooh. No, just the size though. Just an undercut, like up to like there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of hair to lose though when you've been growing up.
But it might be nice. Maybe in the summer.
Yeah, mine is trying to work out how long it is since I cut mine. 6 months.
I like Dawes again now.
Oh, nice.
I wondered whether you would. I wondered whether this would turn you around again.
Right, okay, let's go and tell us.
All right, like his motivations, I think, have become a bit more. I feel like his motivations have been laid out a little bit, particularly in his message to Fred Johnson. He basically wants to open source the nukes, right?
Yes. Yeah.
He's trying to undermine Fred.
Yes.
Well, he doesn't trust Fred. Fred did something very un-Belter by keeping the proton molecule to himself. That's not what you do as a Belter. You share it and you collect. You've got to trust the people. The point is trusting the people. And if you're going, well, I trust the people, but not with this, then you're missing the point, I think.
Yeah.
It's the hard things that you've got to trust the people with.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an ideology without criticism, but it is a logical one, right? Mm. It's like, yes, giving everyone the proton molecule, that could end in disaster, but at the same time, surely only the powerful people or the wealthy people could equally.
And at least this was what people chose, you know, as opposed to having imposed on them.
Yeah. So I get that. And it is in theory, particularly with the proton molecule being as ambiguous as it is at the moment, it has like people that use it as a weapon might be countered by people that use it as a shield. You know, like that could be a.
On the subject of the proton molecule, I have an apology to make to both to Chris and to the viewer.
Not to me. Eh? I want an apology.
No, sod you. apologies to Chris and to the viewer for mentioning last episode something that doesn't happen until this episode, and that's Naomi finding out that they heard a transmission about the.
I did that. I mixed the two. I thought it had already happened
and it didn't happen until this one.
Because
which is weird because I hadn't rewatched this episode yet until a couple of days ago, so it was weird that I got that mixed up in my head.
Well, we knew it as the viewer. Naomi just wasn't in the room.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
So that's a fair point. Yeah.
Yeah. So I get it. There's two things at play here. Fred is acting like an Earther and is in a position of power. Right. That's the one thing.
There's parallels between this part and with Holden backing Fred up in that meeting in the last episode. It's a similar, sorry, carry on, it comes to me.
The second thing might possibly be, but this is maybe a little bit more like, questioning, is like Dawes basically, you know, he pulled Fred Johnson up, right? Like he was basically on the road to suicide, and Dawes basically saved him.
Well, that's something we learn in this episode, that when Fred left Earth, because as far as we knew at this point, he left Earth to become a Belter and to become, you know, a member.
Yeah, we didn't know the in-between until...
Yeah, he left...
And this also explains a bit...
To die as like a penance, you know, to die by Belter's hands as a penance for what he'd done. You know, I mean, presumably he wasn't in the best mental health at that point.
Yeah. But we also see where the connection between Fred... Anderson Dawes and Kamina Drummer comes in as well.
Yeah. And I was a bit curious. I was like, how's Kamina gonna come into all of this? Because, you know, she's got a history with Dawes, but there's a reason she's not on series.
Well, they set it up as a red herring. They set it up to make you think that Kamina is the traitor on Tycho.
Yes.
Which they kind of do a bad job of, because they show Kamina and Dawes talking in a way that she's clearly not.
And she's obviously not buying it. Yeah,
but then at the same time, they're trying to make it out like Kamina was. Oh, she's not surprised, which is
yeah. And then, of course, at the end, there Naomi executes Miller Beltaloda and Handsome Beltaloda.
Kamina Drummer does.
Kamina, who did I say?
Naomi, but yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of. I mean, you know, I don't want to promote or celebrate people being shot in the head, but like, it's a badass moment for Kamina. Like, that's cool.
I mentioned that. Yeah, it's when you said about she doesn't throw people out of airlocks. And I said, well, not yet.
I think this is much more understandable because.
Oh yeah, it's
understandable. Well, they've just shot her friends and her.
Yeah,
and they tortured her a little bit. You know, sticking the gun in the wound is like, you know.
I think you should get a pass if someone's tortured you. You should be, and if someone's tortured you and then you kill them, I think you should get at least mostly a pass.
It evens out. Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe a little finger wagging.
Yeah.
But that's about the yeah.
No, like, don't do that again.
Because there have been cases in the real world where people have basically like killed their abuser, and like in some countries, like I know in the UK that has like given grace to the thing, and it's like you know it's sort of like in a way self defense. Yeah. Sort of.
The normal rules of self defense don't apply necessarily, but we understand that these people. Like, while they could physically escape, they can't escape. They are emotionally and psychologically.
Yeah. They are trapped in other ways. Worth mentioning on that, and somebody got in trouble for this, although they weren't doing anything wrong. If you feel with your conscience that somebody should be found not guilty in the UK, you're allowed to, you know, in the court, you're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
You're not being tested on your knowledge or application of the law.
There's a thing. I don't know if this applies in the UK, but it's definitely a thing in America. There's a thing called jury nullification, where essentially the jury can say yes based on the evidence they're guilty, but this law is unjust, so we're finding them not guilty. And I think that can act as a precedent for other to essentially strike down that law through the judiciary.
Yeah, but in the UK, it's not a technical thing, though. It's not that they're not saying.
No, right, I know, yeah.
You're not. They're not saying we find them guilty, but we don't. But we're not going to say that. It's literally you can vote with your conscience.
If it ever came up for jury service, that's what I don't mean just to, I'm happy to do jury service, but I couldn't find anybody guilty. I don't believe I have the right to do that to another human being.
Sorry, my life.
Regardless of the crime and regardless of the evidence, with the exception of maybe like Nazis or something, I don't think I have that right to make that decision.
What? How?
On a similar note, I'd probably recuse myself for being biased because I've been a victim of quite a lot of crime.
Well, that apparently doesn't, like, apparently, because Lucy's been on two jury services, believe it or not.
Oh, well.
It's really kind of hard to recuse yourself. You can go in there. They don't ask you a lot of questions. They're like, maybe I shouldn't serve. I'm highly racist. And
well, it works. Yeah, that's how it works in America, because the lawyers basically get to choose the jury between them with voir dire, I think that's called. We don't have that system here, do we?
No, it's basically at random. So if you are biased, you're biased. That's the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So
could you go in and go like, these people are not my peers?
You can...
The law says peers. These are not my peers.
These are ruffians, scoundrels, hooligans even.
They don't know nearly as much about him as me.
Do you know that the Americans find it absolutely amazing that hooliganism is a crime here? Like, that's a...
Well, that's to what to them that probably sounds how jaywalking sounds to us.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like a stupid word, and that's a crime.
Yeah, is it really is it really something people get done for? Just like
I asked Danny about this because she mentioned it. I was saying, and I assumed it was one of those things. Like, yeah, technically it's a crime, but you never know. Like, you're not allowed to cross the road except on designated crossings. Like, they're that car centric there, and
that's a problem.
What about roads without pavements?
That doesn't matter. You're only. I mean, if you're in the country, it's not like you're going to get. But like, yeah, in cities, isn't it? Like,
But what if you're a black person in the country?
You've got bigger problems.
Yeah, because I assumed that was basically what one of the laws that they used to just like cops used to hassle people.
Oh, sure it is as well, but.
It's just like they can get you done for jaywalking, just basically any. It's just like a thing they can throw at you. There's a small charge that's like a relatively small fine.
But then they can take you in and question you. By the way, they don't need that post 9/11. You can take people in for whatever.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same here. I don't think anybody from that farming protest in the UK recently got any hassle from the police,
But then we got Just Stop Oil in there for what, six years or something like that?
That is fucking insane.
That is, yeah.
Well, it's fascism.
That's the way.
Totalitarianism. But yeah, anyway, sorry, I brought us down a bit there. Fred,
This episode
first thing, you found out what the waving was. You were asking about the waving last time, and you thought you found out who that was this time.
Ah!
Yeah.
But here's the thing, right? So is this a directing thing?
So it's a little kid, just for clarity to the audience, because they're not seeing anything. It's only us talking. So I feel like sometimes we might lose people a bit in our...
Oh, okay. I can give an illustration.
So the little kid waving from the dome is what we saw... Previously, we saw somebody
with a little animated backpack of is it Miko and Miyake or something?
Yeah. I like that they've got the animation.
Tilda and Umlaut.
Tilda and
Umlaut. So that's the okay. Now,
also worth pointing out, cutest kid ever. She's super cute. It's like that's really meant to tug at your heartstrings. That she's like, oh.
Yeah. Now, is the thing that happens in the first scene where is it May? She's waving out, and then it fades to night almost. Fades to a much.
Well, the mirror's gone.
That's the mirror's going down. Yeah.
Oh, that's the mirror's going down.
But so I think what we're seeing in that opening in that scene near the opening, I think we're seeing Praxis. what's the fractured recollection, because we know yeah. that his daughter was not there at that point. His daughter was
gone. This is his fuzzy memory of the event, and then he wakes up on the refugee ship.
Well, this is the thing. I didn't know whether or not this was like directing, you know, or a directing choice, or whether or not it's the protomolecule fuzzying up memories.
I don't think it's meant to be.
Well, I think it's literally just.
I think you're right, to be his memory.
You know his.
Because I think if it was going to be the protomolecule fuzzing up your memories, I think there'd be more blue in the scene. Like I think.
Yeah. I don't think it's relevant that the protomolecule was involved. I think this is a
blokey blue specs.
This is just something else that happened at the same time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if you'll see it yet, but...
Hang on a minute. I've just noticed something, and I want to ask about... Well, you're not going to tell me about it, right? I forget the guy's name, but the Asian guy that opens it up with...
Prax.
Prax. His name's Prax, yeah.
Prax.
Well,
since before you were watching this, I've said that you will like Prax.
That's what I was just about to mention.
Also, you are like Prax, and I made this case to Hamish earlier, and I got
you got me convinced. I was like, yeah,
Prax is
obviously
Prax
don't look like him.
He's a pacifist,
and
also he has absolutely no sense of urgency. And it's that second one where Hamish was like, "No, that's it."
and it's not well. It's a little bit. It shows up a little bit in this episode, but it shows up in future as well. And it's I can see what I can see where the Chris comparison.
It's a complimentary comparison. Like he's nice, he's kind.
Oh yeah, he's really gentle, nice. Yeah, he's a nice character. The character's a really nice person. Yeah.
Very brave.
He is.
I'll take that as a compliment. He seems nice. I like him.
No. We're not knocking him or you. It's just
no.
It was that little. I wasn't 100% sure what Drew meant.
Yeah.
And then he mentioned a couple of things, and one of them was this like complete lack of a sense of urgency. And I was like,
yeah, because that's
I can see that. Chris is so easygoing. Sometimes he'll
he deals with plants. You know, you don't need a sense of urgency.
For want of a non-racist term, he's a bit zen about it. You know, hang on.
Yeah. So one thing. Oh, wait, you got to measure his cable.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's got twist in the cable.
Yeah, my cable's getting all tangled.
That's the worst one. I'm curious as to his little flower in his thing, because this is like the first thing.
Soya bean plant. Yeah.
A big soy boy myself, so
that's set up as a red herring, right? You're supposed to. He opens it up near the beginning, and he's like, and you're supposed to think blue glow. He's got the proto molecule.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to think, and I think that's what the characters.
See, I thought that was a flask of coffee at the beginning.
I didn't think that at the beginning, but when he pulls it... near the beginning, I suppose that's what I thought as well. It's a drink flask that he brings out. Because somebody else does bring out a drink flask out, and it's...
His
work colleague.
A squirty water bottle or something.
It's weird what they said. I think there's a lot of deliberate little... sort of going on there.
Yeah, because I think because this episode is fundamentally very straightforward. Do they?
I don't think there's many things for you to have your little theories about in this episode. It's all the action parts are straightforward actiony parts. You know, we know exactly why they're happening, who's involved, what they're.
And it is. Doing. A rare example of a bad episode because it has no Bobby in it.
Well, you could argue that she was a dot in the distance when the little girl waves at the window.
That's true.
I mean, I think Bobby needs time to heal, right? She needs. Mm.
She's been sent to Earth, though, so she's not getting much time.
Oh, she's on the way to Earth? Is that? Yeah, but possibly, then presumably someone we know is also going to Earth, like Dawes or Holden or.
What do you mean? We don't. We know Bobby.
Yeah, but like someone we know from the OPA side, like, do you know what I mean? To me, right, OPA is a us plot line.
Yeah.
Whereas like Mars,
you're like, UN. I know. You picked
like,
yourself. Don't try and come. You know, you're in your loader. Don't try pretend to be better loader.
Stolen valor.
Even with the hair, you know.
I do kind of feel like the show. I don't know. It feels like the perspective is not necessarily from the well. It's from the belt.
Well, it's from the Rocinante. It's the Rocinante.
Yeah, the Rocinante are your. And they are characters, you know.
They're not aligned with any power, but they lean more belt, like way more, like that's where they're based. That's who they deal with. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, even from the very very start, that it's not so much that they're belt as in a what's the word I'm looking for? It's not like they choose to be belters or choose to be sympathetic to the belt. They choose a life away from the inners and away from the inner planets. That's I think that's more important, and that's why they are a bit more, not quite neutral, but they are less connected to anything. They're slightly outside of it all.
Yeah,
in the way also, because like basically everybody that was on the Canterbury was like that. You know, that was you take a job like that. It's not,
I think that's part of the belt culture though. Is that it's just the people who are rejected by everywhere else.
Yeah, but most of the people in Canterbury had a choice. Even the belters that are on the ship went away from wherever they were to go and work on a ship that's like out in the middle of nowhere.
But they're working.
They're living and working in the belt. Yeah. There's things to be said from both.
And they're quite multicultural, right? We've got Belt and Iommi, we've got Amos and Holden as Earthers, and we've got Alex as Martian.
Well, I think thinking that way is a little bit of a, you know, if somebody's Mexican and then they move to the US, they are American. If they've moved to the belt, they're belters. Doesn't matter where they're from. Like, as soon as you emigrate, you are of the place you emigrate to, right?
Yeah.
I don't think
I'm likely to show a bit of racism here if this goes into too deep a conversation, you know.
I think
for example, J.K. Rowling is not Scottish.
What? I didn't even know she was Scottish.
Well, she's not. That's my point.
Well, good. Okay.
But she's lived there, so she thinks she should be Scottish.
Like Donald Trump.
Well, that's not moving to. That's one polity, so that's different. She didn't emigrate to Scotland.
Well, she's sort of dead.
There's no change of legal status.
No, yeah, I suppose that's a point. Yeah. Anyway, let's not get into that. Yeah, person.
I mean, I don't know. It's like, I mean, I don't want to be like the sort of hippy dippy home is where the heart is, right? But like,
it is a bit that though. But
I mean,
there's a bit of acceptance or not acceptance from the people there as well.
I'm not saying Alex is in no way a Martian and Holden is in no way an Earther, but like, I think we've got to be careful with that because they've chosen to be in the belt. They are belters. Whether they fully align with that culture and politics, that like they are to some degree, they can be described as belters.
Okay, if you say that, but they were Martians and Earthers, that is like, so what they are now is what
their sympathies will be divided, and
because who we are as people is a lot of it is down to our history, right? And what we've done so far. So, you know,
I think we're overanalyzing this and getting on a big tangent.
I don't know.
I mean, it's something we could talk about the entire every episode and every show, episode of the show. So, yeah,
I mean, this is in part what the episode's about. Like, you see the guy in Mars who's an immigrant to Mars, and then they talk about, well, he chose to be on Mars, so he's just as much, if not more, Martian than the people born on Mars.
You're talking about the soldier guy that died.
Then, of course, there is. Like, then you've got someone who is like Miller, who is born on Ceres and whatever. He doesn't know much of the belt, so even
and also he identifies with Earthers. He's chosen for various reasons to identify with Earthers up to a point. Yeah,
wears an Earther hat. So even though he's not really by any measure an Earther, he doesn't travel the belt very much. He works for an Earther corporation. He wears an Earther hat. You know, so.
Where's called Blimey Trousers? Sorry.
Lives in a council flat. So I think a lot, this show talks a lot about, like, or, you know, sort of identity and how much of it is where you're born and how much of it is.
Yeah,
what you do.
I mean, there is.
And the fact that it's fluid. It's a fluid.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I just chose an extreme example just to be showing my racism. Can I say as well, this isn't really an identity thing, this is a bit a simple technical thing, but Florence Favre's name is still in the credits.
Who?
Florence Favre.
Who that?
Julie Mao.
Oh, okay.
Her name's still in the opening credits, not even in like the later one. She's still in the opening credits all the time. Now, obviously, we've seen her in flashback a lot and things like that in episodes, but she's still been in the opening credits in all of them. It's quite interesting.
Mm. Maybe did they have a standard opening credits for the whole series?
Well, no.
Luckily, no.
No, it slightly changes from time to time. But obviously, the other, you know, Frankie Adams is in. Yeah, as well. I think this isn't to do with the show though. That's just like technical things like billing and equity, or whatever it is, equity and unions, and stuff. You know.
Yeah, I don't know what IMDb says about the number of episodes she's in, but I'm not going to look at that because
don't do that. You'll end up all over the place.
Speaking about the fluidity of identity, though, on the bit where Prax is on the transport or on the refugee transport, as it is. Yeah. When he goes to talk to the crew member, he says, I'm looking for my daughter. And then the other person responds in Belter, and he code switches to me looking for my daughter. He is a Belter, but he can speak, you know, when he's talking to Inyas, he speaks Inya, and when he's talking to Belters, he speaks Belter, you know, which is...
Yeah, so he does, Adam noticed that, I'll have to pay attention. Yeah.
Also, I've just thought about something
But he says, yeah, no, built a load of no children here or something, is what he says to him.
Is that Prax, of course, are botanists. but we see Jules Pierre Mao, like, almost, like, very regularly doing something with plants.
I think that's rich man villain. Symbolism rather than anything tied to that.
Yeah, but maybe Prax is part of, like, obviously Jules Pierre Mao is going to have people tend his garden. He's not doing all of that shit himself.
Mm-hmm.
So he could be associated with rich people, which is kind of where this episode sort of maybe or I, influential.
Like, it's not an unreasonable line of speculation, but Prax was a gardener on Ganymede.
Yeah, he's not just a gardener, he's a botanist, he's a scientist.
He's a farmer, effectively, yeah. You know, essentially.
Remember what the Ganymede station's domes are for, they're agricultural domes.
But then there's that hoity-toity proto-molecule scientist on there. The paediatrician guy.
Mm. Why did you call him a proto-molecule scientist?
Yeah, they're looking for him because he's to do with protogen.
Yeah, I know who he is, but... Oh, right, protogen and protomolecule are not necessarily the same thing.
Brandy. I mean, I'm assuming that he's got something to do with something about...
Well, Holden thinks so.
Mm. Yep, fair enough.
So,
suddenly he's a paediatrician when his other jobs were not related to child medicine, so, you know.
Exactly, so maybe May is proto-child.
What, was she blue?
Well, we'll find out.
She seemed quite happy.
Exactly. That might be the thing. Oh, hey. I don't know. She might be the first citizen of the new proto world.
That would be cool.
I'm guessing not, but I'm just.
Are you harking back to.
Deus Ex?
No. Feck, I forgot who says something like that. It's not Jean-Pierre Mao, isn't it? Yeah, it's Jean-Pierre Mao.
Yeah.
Right, okay, yeah, I get where you're coming at. I said that I didn't think this episode would present Chris with any opportunity for one of his theories or ideas, and there it does. Ooh.
Well, Prax and May obviously have something to do with something, otherwise they wouldn't be there, right? I mean, Prax is on the ship now.
He's on the ship, but he just...
Yeah, you're
like they're going to Ganymede.
You leap tall assumptions in a single bound sometimes.
They're going to Ganymede to look for the protomolecule, and he wants to tag along to look for his daughter. Currently, Holden certainly thinks there's a connection between scientist Prax's daughter and protomolecule. Doesn't know what it is, but
yeah.
So that's what we know. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm assuming... Sorry, we're not We're not pushing it one way or the other, Sonny.
I'm assuming Prax himself is perhaps not important, like not a big player in all of this, but I'm suspecting May might be. I don't know if she, because he's the pediatrician to do a protogen, maybe he's been testing a protomolecule on children. Mm.
Holden does say the link is the daughter. He's got nothing to do with it. The link is the daughter. Yeah.
So that's kind of a weird, creepy thing that protogen would do, isn't it? You know?
Yes.
Yeah. If they'll infect a whole station, they'll certainly, you know.
I'm assuming there were children on Eros, right?
We saw children.
Yeah, we saw children. Yeah, we saw loads of children. Yeah.
So, but they might be doing it in more of a, I'm not going to say more of a humane way, but more in a covert way, you know, rather than just let's throw bodies at the protomolecule and see what happens. Maybe this is a let's see if we inject a little bit in a person or something to that effect and see.
A person. You went all Libifuel.
Protomolecule.
And then suddenly you went with whatever that was. Yeah.
So also, what I found a bit, I don't know. What's his relationship to the lady there? Prax's relationship to the lady on the barge.
It's a co-worker
because she shoots her shot at some point during this, isn't it? You come back to Mars and we can be together. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh my God, the man just lost his daughter.
It's not the right time.
Not the right time.
I mean, she's clearly into it. Well, I read it as she's into him.
Yeah.
But problem solved.
Well, plot resolved.
Holocaust aside.
I did not see that coming.
No, even when I watch it again, it's like...
It's shocking.
Yeah, it's still shocking, yeah.
First time I was like, fucking...
No, here's where I might ask Drew a question about this. Is this connected to the Belter... what do I want to call it? Insurgency uprising or whatever on Tycho, do you think?
I mean, it's all of a piece in terms of what it's responding to and the political conditions. But I don't think they
basically they take all the inners and throw them at an airlock.
I think it's like... just at a time of like fear and paranoia and polarization, which is something we can't imagine, you know, living in the world we do. like what he says basically, it's like it's we're taking care of our own. Like fuck these guys, we're taking care of our own. Which is basically what the Belter says at that point, right?
Yeah, it didn't feel to me coordinated, but it did feel to me like it was part of a broad.
I didn't mean coordinated as in like he'd got an order from Dawes to do this or anything. I just meant, you know, it's not. Order 66. And, you know, I didn't think it was something like that, but you know, I did think it was
that
like
that was a very millennial reference.
Yeah, execute order 66. Surprise!
No, that's still a
evil sounding number.
That was. I'm glad you said that was still a bit because we had no fucking clue.
No, it wasn't. It was supposed to be Bruce Forsyth with Silverback's catchphrase. Yeah.
Are you ready for that?
Doing how it was so.
But I'll tell you what, Bruce Chris, let's
doing Scylla Black, doing Emperor Palpatine.
Which is surprise, Order 66.
It's a Brucey bonus.
It's a Brucey bonus, Order 66.
That's getting better.
No. you're just getting a bit of Stockholm syndrome, I think.
Brucey bonus.
It's still happening. It's still happening.
I'm sorry.
No, it's not good. Don't apologize. It's you know, you do you.
I'm apologizing to the audience, really. And also, this lighting is shameful. The sun is just not happening.
Oh, you go and sort that sun out.
I'll
shake my fist at a cloud or something as well.
I'm putting my kettle on. I forgot to make tea before this one.
It won't suit you. Plus, don't burn your head.
Ooh. Which one shall I do? Oh, is this nice? Okay, sorry. I always do this faffing around.
That's all right. I can't remember how we got onto this tangent.
This is not a nice colour for me. Hang on.
How the hell did we get into this tangent this time?
Protomolecule boy.
While we're doing, hang on, I've got one. I've got an image to show, but it'll take me a moment. Give me a second.
Okay.
Because this is going back to the the attack on the, it's not the bridge.
Yeah, yeah, so I remember where we were at, where we were before we sidetracked. Yeah, so, yeah, do you think that I mean, the refugee ship was heading to Tycho. So, you know, I wonder if there is a, as you say, if there's a connection. Oh, yeah.
It's not going to move, is it? Hang on, I need to sort this out. I'm going to put it in chat.
Well, I can see, like that. He's got a gun to your head.
But look, look. Fred's okay, it's in chat. Look how weird his pose is. This bothers me every time I watch this episode.
There's a dude over here for people.
Yeah, I think if you're watching,
he's like
the episode,
leaning in like this.
Yeah, he's like down like that. I think he's on a platform, or he's just walked over or something.
Very odd pose.
And he's also like, a hell of a lot taller than Cara G by the looks of it.
But he's,
because she is quite like short. When you see her next to him, even because even I don't think that Anderson Dawes is particularly tall, but he's still a lot taller than Kamina Drummer.
It's like he was worried about them. It's like he was worried about them framing to 4-3 for TV.
Yeah. Or yeah, also, you can click.
Oh,
on
Chris,
Drew.
You've disappeared a lot.
Oh, okay, sorry. You're it's the light.
It's your darkness. Yeah. Oh.
Is this any better?
That'll do, yeah, that's grand. Oh, you're still, it's weird.
Oh, you can click on me?
If Hamish clicked on you, you can see that you can see the image full frame.
Yeah, click on me for a moment.
Oh, so that the viewer can see it.
This it's a very, very odd pose.
It is, yeah. So if you put your head, stick yourself back. Go back a bit, yeah. Notice as well he's got the OPA tattoo on his hand as well. But it's quite obvious that he's kind of like leaning down almost. But on the set, I don't know if you'll see it a few frames before or a few frames after or whatever, if there's a wider shot, but he is on a slightly raised platform as well. But why he didn't just like point the gun down? Yeah, maybe we're getting into a, you know, just but the camera angle.
That's that frame, whatever, that bothers me every time.
I was just saying while you were unclipped there for a second that he's also...
If he's on a platform, just, you know, just point at that, like...
Yeah, I know, but this is... What I'm saying is, yeah, you're probably right. What's happened here is probably that the director's gone, oh, damn it, yeah, he's coming from there, and, like, yeah, right, you have to lean down. And he's done the best he could, weird. Sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, because you want to have the eyes on the roughly the same level. If they're talking to each other, or unless you're portraying an up and down sort of thing, aren't you? You know, power play or something. One thing I wanted to check, right? So, does Amos cut the oxygen to basically pacify everyone?
Mm-hmm.
And then they go in with the masks on.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then they turn the oxygen basically back on. It just basically subdues everyone for a short
while. Well, he does something to make the CO2 go too high, basically, because like you don't suffocate because of a lack of oxygen. You suffocate because of excess of CO2. We always think of breathing as going in a certain direction, but it's not. It's the other direction. It's getting rid of CO2 that we is why we breathe. But, I mean, essentially,
we do need to take in oxygen.
Yeah. We need to take it in it in, and then it's the conversion that builds.
I think they've done something with the CO2 scrubbers, so the CO2 is building up. But I think the nitrogen is building because that nitrogen.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly. I'm confusing myself. Basically, they make the air unbreathable. And it makes everybody like
it's a good pacifying thing. Okay, we've really bounced around this episode a lot.
That's a surprise.
There's a very Holden line, I think, is roughly at this point. So as long as we're living and breathing, there's more we can do. We just have to be strong enough. Like, that's very Holden. Holden.
It's super idealistic.
Yeah.
So we are learning about this pediatrician guy who took away May. So it was estimated or theorized or hypothesized that he knew that the battle was coming, and he removed May, the first
Yeah, so there's the, there might be a, you might have something there.
New world there, yeah. So she's obviously something.
Well, I mean, it's possible that he, for some reason, because he's got contacts, heard that the battle was coming, had a kid with him and was like, I can't leave this kid here to die. I mean, that's possible.
Not likely, but possible.
Offered in counter to that, he does look fucking evil.
He's not.
He does look shifty.
Yeah. He's got an evil face.
Why? If my pediatrician was all dressed in black, I'd have questions. Why are you wearing a James Bond villain outfit, sir? So yeah, like that is a very suspicious looking.
Why is your pediatrician office inside a hollowed out volcano? You know.
I think lava goes against the OSHA safety regulations.
Is that you, your OSHA. Bachelor Chow?
Yes, that's my Bachelor Chow, yeah. Of course, important to note that OSHA was brought into being by Richard Nixon. Good job.
Oh, was it?
Along with the EPA.
Oh. For our non-US audience, you know.
This is the pro Richard Nixon podcast.
Yeah,
I thought, but OSHA was more of a Bush era thing. But I knew about the EPA though. Yeah, that's a thing. So, oh my god, they're really aggressive when they take Prax out. It's like snatch him up. It's like
they are very very aggressive with Prax, which is.
Well, I think he's because he's flighty. He's very passive. I wouldn't say he's a coward. Like coward would be wrong. But he's flighty and he sees.
He is panicking as well. Yeah, yeah.
And traumatized. Well,
yeah, he's traumatized yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Holden starts running towards him with an angry face.
Yeah.
I think what he assumes. I think what Prax assumes. This is somebody from that ship stopping me.
Trying to stop him from reporting the crime. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So he starts legging it, and then he's like, "Don't hurt
yeah,
me."
Yeah, yeah. It's all quite understandable from his point of view.
But I would say Holden and Naomi do not handle that situation well.
No.
But they're in a sort of flight or fight mode themselves the very
well going
from right when Holden realizes that Cotier's missing,
mm-hmm.
Right up to you know the sort of insurgency on the station and everything's very tense for them.
Yeah.
So I think
before
they
that,
do handle it badly, but we can sort of see why.
As he says, he's gone to shoot. Porters are, yeah. And he mentions that to Naomi this episode.
Yeah,
and
yeah, Naomi, it covers what we talked about in the last episode. Mm. Yeah,
and Naomi says to him like, "That's not you." Like we're starting to see what it's like because Holden is idealistic, but sometimes that leads him down like kind of a dark path. And we're starting to see what happens when Holden goes off the rails. Like he's still trying to do the right thing and he's still idealistic, but that isn't necessarily always good.
Mm.
And we're starting to see, there will be not spoilers, but there'll be more of that. But yeah, we start to see what it's like when Holden is untethered.
That's a good way to describe it.
So I'm looking forward to seeing more of Prax. He seems like an interesting kind of guy.
Cool. Well, just back to the Holden thing, because I'll say that when Holden's at his best. It's kind of when the crew are all working together and he's listening to their opinions and stuff. It's the same with all of them. They all do better. They all do better as a group than as individuals.
I think that's a symptom of Holden's at his best when it's clear who the baddies are and who the goodies are.
Yeah,
and
fair,
he can go
fair,
after the baddies. Anything that's ambiguous and he kind of spins out, picks somebody and goes after them or deals with the thing he can resolve, which isn't necessarily the important thing in the moment.
Hmm.
Okay, I mean, I think it's a similar thing with Naomi and Amos. You know, she's the sort of conscience and tempering agent for Amos, and I think she's the same for Holden. I think it's kind of in her nature to sort of be a. I don't want to say a pacifier or a mediator. That's not quite what it is. Because she still has her own opinions and everything. She wouldn't, you know, she doesn't just go, come on, guys, let's all, you know, it's not a hippie-ish sort of thing.
But she's, I mean,
and she's got her own fire as well, obviously. You know?
But she's got her problems as well. You know, she is, because of what she's been through.
Yeah, she's also feeling guilty and like worried about the fact that
she's not. She's violence averse to a fault, like to the point where it's, Like it's a problem. Like when she says to Alex,
"Oh yeah," she gets angry with Alex. Yeah.
Yeah, she says, "You don't get to tell me who to shoot." Which on an
kill?
Interpersonal,
I think she says, "Who to kill?"
Who to kill? Which on an interpersonal level is a fair thing to say, but given like the strategic and tactical situation they were in, is a completely fucking unfair thing.
Yeah.
Like you've agreed
Alex,
to go. To
Alex does seem quite shocked by it.
Mm. You've agreed to go to intercept this ship. There are people on this ship when we open the airlock that are likely going to fucking shoot
try
us,
and kill us.
Yep, you're not going to shoot back.
Yeah, it's very. Yeah, Alex seems quite taken aback and quite rightly so, I think.
But I mean, that's how she talks about Fred Johnson. I think the way she says it, she doesn't like people with causes.
Yeah.
And that's fair. That's fair up to a point. But when people have got, you know, if you believe in a just cause, if somebody's got a just cause, then that doesn't work well anymore.
Exactly, yeah.
When you're on the right side.
I think that's more of an expression of herself rather than a commentary on Alex, though. I think that's more about...
That's not about Alex at all. Or the situation. If I may be so bold, Frozen Drew. We're going to lose Drew any second and he'll pop out. There he is. There's a new one. If I may be so bold as to speak for Drew and say that's kind of what he was getting at just there, is that... Yeah, it's nothing to do with Alex or the situation. It's Naomi. It's a Naomi issue. Mm. It's a Naomi problem.
Yeah. And I get it. I get it because she feels, in some ways, trapped amongst like everyone. Right? She's got loyalty to Holden. She's got loyalty to the belt. She's got.
Yeah, I mean, she's got loyalty to the former Canterbury crew. She's in love with Holden. Obviously, there's that relationship, and she cares about Amos.
The stuff in her history that you
there's that as well. She's obviously mentioned it and brought it up. You two need to flip around to not mess up the flag. Mind you, the way you two act, you might as well just keep those flags any way you want. Fucking bloody inners, you know.
loyal to Mars.
In your loaders.
I think this is an episode. I hadn't really noticed this before, but it's an episode where we see the sort of the weak points of all the crew members, because we see Holden apologizing for going off the rails. We see Naomi lashing out of Alex when that was the correct thing to do in that situation. And we obviously see Amos having a fucking breakdown. When it's more Amos talking to Alex, and Alex is saying, like, what happened to you? And Amos is literal tears in his eyes. Like the emotions are coming up, but you know, emotion is difficult for him. Literal tears in his eyes, and it's like, don't make me kill you, because then who would fly the ship?
And again, it's the voice, and he does it. You know,
but that's affection. That's the best he can express affection.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know how to read that, because it's like, in some way, it's like. He's almost saying, like, he's almost sort of acknowledging it's like we protect each other, right? It's like, who will fly the ship? It's like, I will protect you, you will protect me, you know, like...
Yeah, you're sort of referencing back to the previous thing.
I think what's happening there is he's saying then who would fly the ship.
What he's saying is he's angry at this point, and he's got other things in his mind and he doesn't want to...
What it means is he has affection for Alex, but because he's, as Cortazar said, he's cauterized that part of his brain, he can't think in those emotional terms. So he says, who would fly the ship? But what that means is, I love you, you're my friend.
That's the only way you can rationalize that. You know, like we're brothers.
Sorry to the stream people.
Hamish's turn.
Yeah,
oh my
turn.
God.
The
cloning machine is out of control. also,
Sorcerer's Apprentice.
I was thinking Calvin or Hobbes. I was going to say, we turn the box around. It's the transmogrifier, and you turn it around.
I'm seeing 100 Hamishes.
Yeah. I never saw Holden in this outfit before.
Amos.
Amos.
Well, that's what he's just been on an orgy of presumably sex and violence. Like, he's got some bruises on his face. Because he had the thing with the kid that gave him a wobble, so he went off to what he understands, which is violence and maybe sex. I don't know, but like some kind of going off the railsy type thing.
I mean, he just looks like, well, I mean, I didn't necessarily assume that. I just assumed he was like sleeping on the docks or something.
No, he's got bruises and cuts on his face and stuff.
He's been on
his version of a bender.
Yeah.
He's got
a cut lip. Yeah, like I get it. Different places. And I think when he hurts Alex as well, like he gets a bit of a We're not recording. Are we recording? Are we still recording?
Yeah, we're still recording. Sorry.
No worries.
We're all out of order now, I assume.
We are. That's my fault. It's because because it messes with the sound. I had to redo something.
Who am I now? Am I OPA now?
No, I'm still the OPA.
Okay. Am I still the UN?
No, you're on Mars now. So you two need to flick around.
All right, I'm going to zip out. I'm also going to go for a space piss, and I'll be back in 2 seconds.
Okay, apologies to the... apologies to our audience, because also I'm too lazy to fix this and edit it back. So you get the raw power of it all.
Yeah.
So Chris will be back. Yeah, I think Alex, I think you're right there about how you're really good at what's the word I'm looking for?
Lovemaking?
Well, obviously. No, you're pretty good at it's not explaining it. You're pretty good at explaining Amos anyway. This is the word I'm articulating Amos, yeah.
I've thought about him a lot.
Yeah. Well, he's that kind of character. And I like that that he started talking about Lydia as well.
Yeah, well we see it on the screen, don't we? We see
we get a full name, he's looking, he's thinking about it. Oh, I don't know if he searches or if he's thinking about searching, he doesn't quite hit the enter button.
Yeah.
It's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, like, I mean, this, in a way, it's an Amos episode. From the previous episode, him scaring the kid, which sent him off the rails because he'd become the monster, and then him thinking about being a kid, reacting to Alex the way he did, Amos says to, when Prax comes on the ship, Amos says to Prax, you're going to find your daughter. That's a good reason to be with us. Like,
yeah.
It all of Amos's stuff, it all ties together.
Oh, we've got an Amos picture in the background.
Oh, and there we go. Does Prax know much, like, has he got much use with mag boots? Because Amos says to him,
he doesn't seem to. When Amos gives them to him, well, he's lived on Ganymede all his life, and Ganymede
has
gravity.
All his life?
He says that, yeah, he does say that.
Yeah, he does say something. Yeah. I couldn't remember. That's all. But yeah, he doesn't. He won't know about mag boots and traveling in space very much now.
Yeah, because Adam Jensen was like very adept at space, wasn't he? He was like kick the mag rails, put the heels together. Yeah, you know.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Yeah.
The emerald mag boots.
Yeah. So
movie.
I'm looking forward to seeing him on the ship. I don't know if he becomes like a member of the crew or not, but
I mean, he is an enjoyable character, and it's enjoyable having him interacting with the crew for however long.
Yeah, it's a pity they get attacked and the real gun goes right through him, takes his head off next episode. Wait a minute, that's something else.
That's dead. It might be that he's just in it for like some episodes and then he moves on or something similar to Miller in that regard.
Well, without giving away anything too much, I will say, remember that we're on effectively the second book. And a different story arc now.
Oh, okay. So he could be a new character similar to Bobby.
Yeah. I mean, the TV show brings people in at different times than the books do. Because Ava Sorala isn't in the first book.
Oh, she's not in the first book?
No.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, you probably said that before. Yeah. Oh, interesting. But I'm assuming that Ava Sorala is a character throughout the arc of
Ava Sorala.
Ava Sorala.
I even make that silly joke to remind you.
Okay, I just thought you were just singing a song.
Have a banana. No. It's just
Avasarala.
Avasarala. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, hey, I know. I'm being. It seems a bit petty, but it jars me every time.
Okay.
It's because it's a lack of sleep combined with being pedantic, grumpy old
bastard.
I remember
things by how they're spelt, and I've misspelt it in my brain.
Yes.
I know what you mean by that. I know exactly what you mean.
I know what you mean as well. I've done that in the past too. But take this as an opportunity to start getting it right. Yeah, I thought you had a list as well,
Sorry?
I thought you had a list.
Oh, I do have a list.
And that's why you had to add Kamina to it, because you were saying some bizarre thing.
Kamina, yeah.
I think we should call Kamina Drummer. I think she is most often referred to as Drummer rather than Kamina.
She is, yeah.
But
so I mean,
Drummer's very easy to remember, for me at least.
I
remember her quite clearly all the time.
When she's standing like this.
Yeah, this is the standing to attention with the zipped up overalls.
Is she the only one that wears that smart uniform?
It's not, it's just another, it's just overalls again.
Overalls, yeah.
Same as everybody else, yeah. But she does wear it like in a military way. She's like, zipped up, the pockets are tidy. It's always very military.
Somebody
looking.
Who's a bit chaotic. She's very dapper. She's very neat.
Because she also comes from Ceres, which is not known for being neat. It's kind of
another one of those characters. Actually, I think this is maybe, I mean, not that it's real, but I think this might be why she and Fred get on so well, is they're both kind of characters who are like controlled rage all the time.
Make of that what you will. Which thread were we on before in my technical collapse?
Well, as we said in our chat, it's not a hugely thready episode. It is a momentum episode, and it does have a real sense of momentum of, building up. They're going to Ganymede.
Yeah, we're going to get to the next thing.
Yeah.
And it's quite funny. You can almost say it's a parallel to the first series where people are following different threads to get to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you take the Ross and Ante crew, the Martians, the Martian military, the Earth sort of, in as much as they're sort of spies in the belt, and Miller, they're all trying to sort of, even though they don't always realize it, they are basically all investigating the one thing, which is Julie Mao in the first series. They're essentially all chasing that thread, which is where it goes. And I think it's kind of similar with this. It's like, the protomolecule thread has now led to Ganymede because of the transmission and stuff. So yeah.
And it's also got a similar thing where, it's a show with mysteries, but in the first season, the first mystery is who owns those stealth ships. And then by the time you're about to find out, you've got a much bigger mystery. You don't really care about who owns the fucking stealth
ships anymore. You suddly lose that being the stakes get raised quite a lot. Yeah.
Although I do wonder,
the show does that quite well, though, doesn't it?
It does really well.
Although I do wonder, like, how many mercenaries Protogen has. Like, do they have enough? Like, presumably, if they went to direct war with either Mars or Earth, or even the belt, they could lose. Maybe.
Okay. First off, I love that you always have these logistical questions.
Yeah.
Like, how many people does this fit?
I wonder how many toilets are on each ship, and how many janitors they've got for each system.
I enjoy the logistical questions, but I think that goes to some whatever Avasarala was saying an episode or two ago, where she's saying like, a corporation is not as powerful as a government.
Yeah, they don't have a military or so. Yeah,
a government. In our present day, a corporation has. They can liquidly expend maybe billions. A government can spend trillions.
Yeah.
And also, a government can send an army in.
And that army
it's getting
is trained.
Dark early, like, isn't
yeah, and big.
Yeah, it's trained, it's big, it's well-equipped. It's everything that a mercenary army is typically not, right?
You've said this before. I mean, you've made the point about this before, about how Yeah, you made that point.
Yeah. Typically, mercenary armies are pretty weak against professional fighting forces from a country, because they don't have the same discipline, right? And
and they've not been indoctrinated in the same way, and you know,
all that. Yeah, yeah.
They've not been sold the lie that soldiers basically have to be sold to make them do what they do.
Yeah. Going back to which part now? Amos. He's looking for when Alex comes onto the ship. He's looking for that person. Is it Lydia?
We mentioned that when you were away for a moment. Yeah, yeah. He's looking for Lydia. But what I was saying is, I can't remember if he actually hits the search button or not, or if he just puts the information in and then does.
I think he does. I think Alex comes in and he's embarrassed.
And then he takes it away from. That's right. He swipes the screen off. Yeah.
Probably part of why he's so aggressive towards Alex. He's embarrassed him.
Yeah.
I think he has mentioned Lydia in a previous episode, right?
He did mention her, yeah.
When he was talking to Cortazar.
Who was he talking? Was it Cortazar? He mentioned her name by name to him. But I think he mentions her by name. I think that's like maybe the third or fourth time we've heard her name.
Yeah.
The context of the conversation is talking about mothers, so we get a sense that this is a mother figure for Amos, which is why all the kids stuff in these couple episodes relating to Amos. Amos is thinking about when he was a kid and about his mother. Like that's what's, and he's scared and frightened and doesn't know where to turn, so he's turning, you know, turning to his mother, or at least, you know, psychologically, I think something.
I don't know if this is like an obvious thing that I should have spotted already. Maybe I did and forgot. Oh my god, the light with Cortazar, are we to think that when he was talking about his mum basically declining, that at the time he would have been in sort of like excruciating agony watching that, but he wanted the his feelings removed to alleviate that pain from him.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. Yeah.
You know, I might have to apologize for hypocrisy. I think I called him Cortazar again.
Well, God, you do get to yourself now, aren't you?
I don't hold anybody else's standards that I wouldn't hold myself to.
So that sort of gives a bit more like thought to Amos and how, you know, he's obviously dealing with something that is very, very protective about. Like he's. The only one he can open up to is Cortazar, because
I think that's obviously... partly because he feels a sort of connection with him, but partly because he's not going to turn around and chat about it to anybody else.
I think also Cortazar understood. Like Cortazar was saying, was inferring things about Amos before Amos had said them that were accurate.
Yeah.
And also he does ask, he goes, who's Lydia? Which is strange coming from someone that allegedly doesn't have any empathy. So I think Cortazar...
have curiosity, though.
Yeah, he's scientifically... I mean, he's very curious about everything that's going on. He still also shows an enthusiasm and an excitement about the work, as it were, you know.
I also think, like, you can stamp that stuff down. I mean, you probably can't get rid of it completely. Like, there's going to be the embers of, you know, or whatever.
I don't know if empathy is... I mean, I'm not like sort of second guessing the science of the show in this way, but like in the way that I'm obviously about to do. But it kind of seems a little bit like it's more pain suppression than it is of just like cutting out various emotional chunks, right? Like it's just like, oh, I can look at something horrible. It's just not going to. It's not going to
desensitizing. I suppose
desensitize. That's the word. Mm. It's just basically clinical desensitization of an inhuman degree almost. But like, just desensitization. You might still have the empathy. There might even be like sympathy and things like that. It's just a very clinical kind of approach to it, right? Rather than it's just desensitized. It's just like. It's like a part. It's a feelings part. He's just cut the feelings out, and maybe Amos has stamped down those same kind of feelings himself, and he's like, And yeah, maybe he's questioning that, because maybe he's thinking about going in lots of different directions. Maybe he's thinking that I'm right to stamp down this pain that I've had. Or maybe he's thinking, oh, Cortazar stamped down the pain he had and he's become a mad scientist. And maybe I don't want to be like Cortazar. Maybe
He definitely sees as Cortazar and sees like this. Yeah, when he's looking at Cortazar, he's not looking at that as like accepting he's free of pain. Like he's looking at like, I don't want to be that monster. This whole season is like Amos not wanting to become a monster. For sure.
Yeah, but there's lots of different types of monsters, right? Like,
like
Amos is often seen as a beast. People probably don't look at Cortazar and see a beast. They just see someone who's strange and maladjusted or like, you know, like odd.
Also with Amos, the reason he stamped all that stuff down is survival, which is another theme with Amos. He sees everything. I mean, the thing with I'm going to use the right name to keep Hamish happy. Kenzo in the airlock when he's talking about the churn.
I thought you were going to come with the churn there.
What's the only thing that matters is survival. So that's not why he stamped stuff down. That's a result of him stamping. You know, he had to survive. He had to stamp these things down. So now he can only see things in terms of survival to an extent.
Yeah. And is this some sort of a turning point in his or approaching a turning point in his kind of character? I feel like he's
not quite turning point, but I definitely know what
Like up the hill, going up the hill. He's you know, the
he's coming to, he's learning about who he is and finding a way.
Yeah, I think ever since he felt betrayed by Naomi, he's been a bit more introspective.
I mean,
I look at it, you know.
The way you get the way Amos is from being abused in childhood and not receiving love, right? So we can assume, and we've had hints, that he had a childhood of abuse and without love, with the exception of Lydia. And now he's in a position where he has love again. You know, he's been working in the belt and he's had, you know, relationship with like Naomi and that, but now he's in a family, really. He's got people who love him and he loves back, like the confrontation with Amos this time. And that's wobbling his worldview, basically.
With Alex.
Alex.
Yeah. What did I say?
Amos.
I do that a lot.
That's all right. We all do it.
But, So now he's in a situation, because it's all about surviving in the present situation. Now he's in a situation where his survival way of thinking doesn't really apply anymore. He's got to adjust to a situation where he can feel love again and be loved.
Yeah, he's got a support mechanism around him,
which he's not used to.
No, yeah,
and doesn't function very well under.
Yeah,
I do love the bromance between Alex and Amos though. That like, because it's it grows and changes and twists and turns so much over from every episode, but it's gonna, you know, that just by this like weird relationship that they have, the fact that it's just churning along
I think that comes from Amos being Amos, and also Alex is very compassionate, but I don't think he's very socially aware. I don't think he reads people very well.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So I think he's got
not diplomatic. There's a better word than that for it being
peacekeeper.
No, not as clinical a word. There's like a word for having empathy and stuff. There's a word I'm thinking of. Yeah, no. It's okay. Don't worry about it. He does care. But he's not as
he doesn't really understand the problem though, so he always approaches it a bit wrong.
He's kind of like Amos in some ways. He's just, you know, he's like a I think they're all, you know, I wouldn't say they're yin and yang exactly, but they are complementary in a way, you know.
Alex has selfishly abandoned his family and obviously feels huge guilt out of that. And I think he's...
Yeah, well, isn't that a jibe that Amos makes? Like, But he's obviously... That also ties into Amos thinking about childhood and children, because he's thinking about...
That makes Alex essentially like a present-day liberal, in that he spends all his time trying to convince himself he's a good person.
A little bit of politics there.
A little bit of politics.
politics for you, sir.
Little politics for the weekend.
Is there any bits have we covered it all?
We haven't covered it all, apart from the last interaction between Holden and Fred Johnson, which
Well, we've sort of glossed over the entire uprising on the station a bit, you know. We've talked about all the main beats of it, but we're never really.
It's true.
We've said what happened. Yeah, you know. Again, though, we're expecting to some extent the viewer. Hello, viewer. We're expecting the viewer to some extent to be following along episode by episode. This, you know.
Oh my god! It would be amazing if someone who just watched this but not The Expanse then tried to put together the show.
Some episodes we do that's possible. And others you're like, what? Because we're talking about. We're not talking. We often don't talk directly about the. I mean, even our tangents are usually coming from a place of still something to do with the episode we're talking about. But we don't always talk about the linear story part of it or the details. We'll interpret it and analyze it rather than talk about the show directly. If that makes sort of sense.
But no, I have watched shows like this about shows I haven't watched. And I love it, and then after I'll usually go, it's made me curious enough to watch the show, and I think it's a different way of watching it. It makes you experience it differently.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming at it from a point of view where Drew and I have watched it many times, because particularly for me, what I did is I watched it. The first series or maybe the first two were available. I can't remember exactly, but then. By the time the third series came out, and fourth, fifth, and sixth, whatever it is it six series? I think it's six. By the time later series came on, I'd then rewatch from the start every single time. And so I've seen the first series and the second series and the third series particularly quite a lot in comparison. Also, for preparation, Chris watches it as a viewer, and also then he analyses it, so he tends to watch it twice or more.
That's an interesting way to watch. That's different from how you would be watching it.
So I think it's a different. Yeah, we're coming at it from a point of view of people that have. Yeah, if you've just watched it casually or watched it through once, you're probably not getting most of what we're talking about, but you might get interested to check it out again. Or something, you know. Or if you haven't watched the show, as you say, you might think, "Oh, I wonder if this is interesting." I think there's a lot going on in the show beyond just what goes on in the show. If that makes any sense.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Okay. So the uprising. This is kind of interesting. Obviously, people are looking to Dawes as a sort of unifying figure amongst the factions. Then.
I don't know. I think they're influenced by Dawes. I don't think they're doing this in order to put Dawes in charge of Tycho or anything like that.
No, I think they're just doing it as a reaction against Fred. We're mixing the names up a lot, but against
Fred Johnson.
You do want to call him Fred Johnson, don't you? It's one of those things where you want to put his full name in, you know?
Fred. Yeah, Fred is just like... Because also...
Everybody in the show calls him Fred Johnson.
Yeah, it's also a bit freaky to me... He says, waving his prop. It's also a bit freaky to me when people call Holden Jim.
Yes.
That is so clearly like a Star Trek thing. Like they called him Jim because Star Trek. There's no way they didn't call him Jim because Star Trek. They don't overuse it because then it would be weird. But they do drop the occasional Jim. And
well, usually Naomi's the one that calls him Jim.
Yes.
His parents and Ava Sarala as well, they call him James Holden. You know,
He is the Kirk character. Not the Kirk
personality. Not personality wise.
Not the film Kirk, but the original series Kirk. He is that Kirk.
That just reminds me of Anjun's status. He's dead, Jim, but not as we know it.
Yeah,
he's a good
one.
Shout out to Anjun. Well done. Hello, Andrew.
Yeah, well done.
There we go. Now we've got something else we've got to say. You've got to watch this episode. You're mentioned in it.
You've got to mention it.
Yeah.
Find out what we really think about you.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy Anjun's.
Maybe that should be part of the...
Anjun is, and this blows my mind, both German and one of the funniest people I've ever known.
I think German
people.
She comes up with some of the cleverest, funniest stuff that happened in my circles. I wish she was a bit more confident to get involved in more stuff, because
she is funny as fuck, and June's amazing. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. That should be the text on the thumbnail. Is like, can't believe Anjun. We said this about lovely. Anjun.
The funniest person you've ever known. But yeah, she's not just. Some people are that all they can do is be funny, and that gets tiresome. But she's also incredibly smart and articulate, and knows tons about everything. And
she's very clever as well. Yeah.
So,
highly analytical as well. Now, that's very German, though. You know, it's funny actually. Just before we move on from that, is like how her and Benny, another friend of the show, friend of the polar bear. Was it somebody called it the polar bear universe or something? I can't remember.
Polar bear extended universe.
Extended universe. Benny's also German, but Benny's. He's a very different character. He's also, Benny's, again, very clever, though. You know, he's very clever with computers and stuff, and he's also multilingual and all sorts of things, you know. But, you know, for all that they're very different people, when they're German, they're German. You know, they're very German both as well. It's kind of weird, you know. There we go. We talk about the Germans this episode.
I just saw the bit where Kamina Drummer just shoots the two, the handsome Belter and the Miller Belter. They're done. They're right in the head, by the way.
I love how she did it. Just staggering. She's gut shot.
Yep.
Staggering forward, just pulls a pistol and bop, bop.
Yeah,
like, again, not condoning murder, but that's cool and badass.
Do you think that she's doing it then because it's like, look, I ain't going to get a chance to do this in the future?
I think it's just anger. I think it's just... rage.
Yeah, she looks pretty angry.
But how fucking dare you.
I suppose so, because, like, you know, I'm guessing Kamina and Fred were like, Fred Johnson, sorry, were like, did a lot of work to build up Tycho together.
I think
that's the impression you're giving. It's worth saying. Or maybe it's not, I don't know. I use that phrase a lot, and it's probably not always accurate. It might bear mentioning that the character of Kamina, how can I say this? It's quite I'm trying to get this right. The character that was meant to be, that was like a sort of throwaway character, became Kamina for the TV show.
Okay.
And Cara G sort of said, "Oh, couldn't she be the one to do this part and say this part?" So she did. She did shape that her character came in. So I think she's an amalgamation of multiple.
Yeah, she's an amalgamation character.
Okay.
Another reason for the shooting also, like, the OPO power structure is not the kind of power structure where you want to appear weak.
Yes. So again,
this is what happens if you fuck with me. This is what happens.
That's something else I meant to say when we were talking about Fred last episode, airlocking that guy as well. You've got to be tough in the OPA. If you're in the OPA in any sort of, anything above just being a belter or, you know, a wannabe OPA person, you know, if you're going to be in the OPA, you've got to be tough.
Because I think there's some of it when it comes to, like, the anger. Some of it is, like, the audacity of it. It's like, you know, we give you a home here, you know.
Definitely. Yeah. And also, I think that Drummer's kind of... I think Drummer's annoyed with Dawes. For trying even before the actual coup or whatever you want to call it, she's annoyed with Dawes for trying to sort of put a wedge between Fred and everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think she's loyal to Fred to a fault, you know.
Well, she does say that to Naomi. It's like, look, has Fred ever done you wrong?
Yeah, it's interesting that she brings that up because she does say, has Fred ever done you wrong? And does Naomi just say no, or does she go, no? How does she actually respond? What's the...
She goes, something like, no, I suppose not.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah. It's almost like she's made Naomi think about why she feels the way she does about Fred.
then but, why don't you trust
him? In a bit of detail, yeah. And then why don't you trust? Yeah, exactly.
But it's also made clear in that scene that Drummer wouldn't necessarily handle things the same way Fred does, because Naomi says, sure, what are you going to do with him? And he's like, well, we're going to space it. Oh, I'd space him or something. And Naomi's like, I didn't ask what you would do. I asked
what Fred would do. Yeah, exactly.
So there is distance between how they approach things, but for whatever reason, I think what I get is like Drummer has seen Fred build something up, give Belters jobs, a reason for being, you know, building the Naboo, like, you know, putting them on the map kind of thing. And I think she respects that.
Hmm. Yeah. Also, I'm curious, what happened to the Naboo?
We don't know currently.
Yeah.
Is it because it presumably you're going to get it back, right? I mean, you've got big nets.
Got big nets. Need a very big net for the Naboo.
Did someone, I mean, when they sent it off, did someone just put a brick on the accelerator and then jump out?
I think so.
Well, yeah,
yeah,
they programmed it to be a battering ram, so I don't think they had anybody on board, no.
Presumably not. I mean, why would you?
They were intended to smash it into errors.
Yeah.
But I think there's a slightly amusing line that Fred, I think it's Fred that says something like, we can't just keep stealing ships and or something like that at some point, you know.
Yeah. It's, I mean, yeah, Fred, so they foreshadowed this a lot, that Fred Johnson's not going to be the boss of Tycho for much longer.
Well, that's Anderson Dawes' opinion, yeah.
That's Anderson Dawes' opinion. That's Holden's opinion. Yeah. That's opinion the Mormons' opinion.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely the Mormons' opinion. Yeah, because the Mormons... Yeah, it's odd. Yeah, that's mentioned by the Mormons early on. They do actually say to him, we want rid of you. And then they go, well, but right now we want you to keep working hard.
Well, Fred does, it'd be shame. It's a lovely ship.
Lovely ship, shame if something happened to it, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I suppose in a way they've kind of brought it on themselves a little bit in terms of Fred's reactions.
I don't know. I think in many cases they were right to be suspicious of Fred.
Possibly.
His OPA ties led that ship to being...
It was kind of unique circumstances.
There's always unique circumstances. Life is a series of unique circumstances.
Well, no.
I had a really, really, really good... I have a really good reason, Your Honour. It's a really good reason. It's the yeah, but defence.
I mean, if you're using something to literally save humanity, I think you get a pass.
I think you get a wee bit of a pass, yeah.
Yeah, but it only works if you actually save humanity.
Well, he kind of didn't. Well, he did in the end.
He did, yeah.
It was the Rocinante and Tycho that saved...
Miller. It was Miller.
Yeah, and it was Miller's idea.
I know, but...
It's all Miller.
Okay.
The Naboo was Miller's idea. So.
Well, it's not just Miller, is it? It's Miller and Julie.
Yeah, Miller and Julie.
Miller and Julie, yeah.
Miller and Julie and the protomolecule.
No, it's Miller and Julie.
I mean, they couldn't have just pushed it into...
Yeah, but they wouldn't have had to if the protomolecule wasn't involved. So it's Miller and Julie they're the ones...
Is this a bit like at the end of Fallout 3 where you can convince the computer to kill itself?
The ending of Fallout... I know this is well-trodden ground, but they give a radio... A super mutant who is immune to radioactivity.
And then
at the end, you have to go into a radioactive chamber to save your dad. And they've done the dialogue option. You can say to the super mutant, why don't you go in there and save him? But because they had, you know, they planned this, because the super mutant isn't always in your party. So the super mutant responds, no, I think this is something you should do for yourself.
Yeah, this is your destiny.
Fucking absurd.
Well, in
fucking
the...
Bethesda half-arsing everything since 19 fucking whatever.
In the Broken Steel add-on, I think you can do you can send them in.
They let you. Okay,
they fixed it in post.
So you could maybe you could argue that actually the Broken Steel is like it should just be the actual end of the game.
Yeah.
And they've just cut it off for DLC, which is a fair argument.
Or maybe he just secretly hates you.
What, Todd Howard?
No. The whatever that super mutant is called. I mean, Todd Howard obviously hates his audience.
It's probably just half-arsing it, really.
Yeah, absolutely half-arsing it.
Well, Bethesda, particularly in that era, have had a history of pushing games that aren't ready. Fallout New Vegas being the other one. Not Bethesda Obsidian, but like that. The guys in the suits above them. you know, they were like,
oh no, they release unfinished games and then they don't even patch them. They just let the community fix them.
Yeah. Actually, that was a lot in that era. That, I mean, I know it happens still a fair bit now, but like Vampire the Masquerade, literally just unplayable without.
I mean, not to sort of turn this into a different podcast, but that in the olden days that happened as well. Not as cynically and deliberately, I would say, because what happens now is people just go, why should we pay testers when we can just release it and people fucking buy it anyway. I think there's a lot more cynicism involved in it now, but there would be games that were basically unfinishable. You know, there'd be a bug or an error in the design or whatever, and like most people wouldn't have known to send the cassette back, you know, to get a replacement or whatever, to get the update. You know, like, I mean, it probably took until early internet before that was even a thing.
Well, if you're talking about cassette tapes,
mid to late 90s before it got to, well, yeah, or the disc, depending, you know, but it's probably mid to late 90s before it became
what they should have done
a normal thing to expect a publisher to fix things.
They should have broadcast the fix via radio and you record it onto cassette.
Oddly enough, I mean, this is not, again, we're going to say big tangent thing, but they did have audio and video broadcasts with software recording.
Yeah, no, I've seen that. Oh my God, yeah, very cool. Yeah.
God, yeah. That's...
Oh, right, Chris knows about that. Right, okay.
Vaguely. Like, there's, like, in the crevices of my youngest childhood memories, I remember...
Yeah, there'd be the end of a show, the end of some shows, some computer-related shows... There would be like a you know.
There's also, isn't there a prog rock album where if you play it into an acoustic coupler, it would do, like, it was of that era and it would do play some message? Or
yeah, there are things like that. There's some, well, there was some, the fact that compact cassettes were used for a lot of software also means that the B side could have something different to the A side. Although that depended on the platform, because some platforms used the entire tape. You know, it wasn't, because I'm trying to remember how many tracks are on a. I think an audio cassette's got four tracks. Yeah, four tracks. It is four tracks. There's four tracks on an audio cassette, two stereo, and it's used as two stereo tracks generally. But if you have a specific data cassette recorder type setup, like, so the Atari had a dedicated cassette and the Commodore had a dedicated cassette. But things like the Dragon or the Spectrum didn't, or, you know, any of the Sinclair stuff. So they just used a normal cassette player. So,
who was the prog rock band that did the Spock quote? It's I can't remember the
Spock's beard. You're talking about Spock's beard?
No, it's a sample of Spock saying something.
Oh,
and it's
God.
In the song.
It's Life, Jim, but not as we know it.
No, that's definitely a Star Trek and by the firm.
Oh gosh, that I hate that song. I'm sorry. Oh.
I've played it on my show.
Shame on you.
No, but it's, you know, it's funny still. I think Drew's looking that up. Sorry, I know somebody was posting something to my letterbox and Peanuts heard them. And it's something small. It's an SD card, I think, or something like that. So I'm going to go and pick it up so he doesn't eat it. I'll be right back. I don't know how close we are to finish, but you can tell me that when I come back.
Cool. I always figured that if there was a bug on something with a cassette or a floppy disk, and I got to a stage in a game where I couldn't progress any further, I just assumed the disk was broken. Like, I dropped the disk one too.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I would the same. Yeah. Yeah, back in those days, you'd just be like, well, that game's unfinishable, and live with it and play something else.
Yeah, I mean, there's not that many games, particularly when I was young, that I even finished. Like, there were many games that, like, I just sort of played a lot of, but, like, the first few levels, and I just replayed the first few levels a lot, like Outrun and stuff like that. But I don't, you know, I've got a lot of, like, Settlers 2. Love Settlers 2, played loads of it, but I think before I even finished, like, the main
demos
campaign,
sometimes.
Yeah, demos. Or sometimes you just do the roll your own mission, you know, where it's just like randomly generated or something like that.
The song I was thinking of was Pure Energy by the Information Society. And I think they're the ones where one of their songs or albums has a...
I don't know them. That's... there you go. Drew knowing a prog thing, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
Peanut, don't.
The only thing. Naomi has released the torpedo, by the way.
How do you mean?
You know, the torpedo to get rid of the protomolecule.
Yeah.
She went ahead and released that because at the very end, during the.
What do you mean released it?
Fired it.
What do you mean by fire?
No,
the torpedo to kill the protomolecule in, you know, when she was doing it as just training before, not just.
Oh, no. What she did before, the crew decided to fire it into the sun.
Yeah.
She ran a simulation, so it looked like she fired it into the sun, but she actually didn't do anything with it.
Yes.
Now, when she was nervous about them getting a signal from the protomolecule and they would find that she'd hidden the missile, she just moved it. She's put it in another hiding spot, a different hiding spot.
Oh, right, because there she's got torpedo flight control.
Yeah, it's in a torpedo. It's housed in the torpedo.
The protomolecule's stored in the torpedo instead of the warhead.
It's presumably, where the warhead would be. They've got the proton molecule instead. So she's just moved its hiding location because she thought she was going to get caught.
Oh, right, so she's still keeping hold of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I just want to... No, carry on. Sorry, don't stop talking because I'm looking at something.
Right, okay.
God, it's dead air there.
I was waiting for a ruling.
Hang on a minute.
Yeah, no, sorry. I did say that in that way and I was like, oh, I shouldn't have.
Everybody quiet.
So they're going to Ganymede. So this is the final monologue is interesting because it starts off on relatively decent terms with Fred Johnson being like, on your way to get the proto molecule for me. And then Elm's like, if we do find it, like, we're not bringing it back. And he's like, well, fuck you and don't come back.
He makes
a point before he releases the ship of saying, like, you'll have no safe harbor here anymore. Mm. And, you know, yeah. Mm.
But I side with Dawes, but I feel this. The crew's reaction to Fred Johnson here, I find deeply unfair. Like, he has done a lot. Like, they've worked together. Mm. It's been half and half. But, like, he's done a lot for them. Like, he's a friend at this point, and they treat him very poorly.
Yeah, I mean, he repairs the ship for them. Mind you, it's a battle they get into together and stuff. Peanut, stop it. Come here.
They are allies, and then they're just like, well, you're not useful to us anymore. You can fuck off.
Yeah, I think you're right there a little bit because it's like free repairs and food and lodging. Mm. That's not expensive in the middle of a refugee crisis or several refugee crises at this point.
Yeah. And the ammo for the ship and like.
Oh, has that been resolved as well? I couldn't remember if that. I didn't want to say. Because remember we were talking about that before. Where are they going to get ammo? And Drew and I were hinting that perhaps Tycho Station could make that. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I don't know, like, it...
Holden just says you're irrelevant now. You don't have the scientist. Essentially, that's what the crux is. You don't have the scientist. Your position there looks a bit shaky, so bye.
Yeah, I mean, Holden expresses his doubts that Fred will even be in charge when he gets back.
Mm. Yeah. So I think you're right. I think Fred Johnson, having basically put his neck out for everything he believes in...
Absolutely, yeah. And with the Naboo in particular, like, he's really putting his neck on the line with the Naboo. And I think that's deeply unfair. That bothers me.
Yeah, but also deeply unfair from the OPA's point of view, although they don't really know, so maybe...
Yeah, but who's the OPA? Again, we come back to this a lot, and I think it's ever more relevant, is who is the OPA?
Also,
the OPA is a lot of factions, but is Dawes the OPA now? Is Fred Johnson the OPA? You know,
They're both
right,
the OPA.
Right now, Dawes.
Like, yeah,
I think
yeah.
Dawes, yeah. Dawes is the leading light in the OPA right now. And I think I understand the OPA's position towards Fred. They do see him as a like collaborator, and like he is naive. Essentially, he doesn't understand how you've got it as a belter, how you've got to relate to the inners. So the OPA's position, I understand, but the Rocinante's position that seems
a bit ungrateful,
mean, petty, and ungrateful. Mm. Yeah,
and anyone outside of Fred Johnson's inner circle, I was going to call it Fred Dawes there. Fred Johnson's inner circle. They're not going to know about the nuances of the Naboo, really, are they?
No.
Maybe Miller Belter, but like, he's dead now, so
yeah.
And nuance always gets lost in conflict, right? Like it's and a lot of it is theatre, and Fred Johnson still acts like an earther to them, you know, like it's, you know, speaks like an earther.
Well, more importantly, thinks like an earther. I think that's the problem.
Quacks like an earther.
Yeah. Because like Dawe says, he's like, look, it's no hard feelings. It's just like you're still earther, really. You know. Like,
yeah.
You know.
And Dawe says beyond that, he says, I tried to teach you, but you didn't listen effectively. You didn't listen to what I was telling you about.
He talks
to
him in a similar way that he talks to Miller.
Drummer. Yeah. Oh, Miller, right. Yeah,
but from a different point.
To be honest,
but from a completely different point of view, it's like he tries to. Well, he's trying. No, it's not really. He's trying to teach Miller how to be a builder, and he's trying to teach. Fred, how to be a builder.
It's a bit like
you know, I do lean more to Drew's view of Dawes than Chris does, or than Chris's rather. And
well, Chris likes him now. Again,
I see his
Until next episode, when he flips again.
Well, I mean, expect more flipping, but this is not my final landing point, right? I'm just usually if I was watching this as a viewer, I'd reserve all judgment. But since I'm chatting shit about it, I'm sort of going through an overly decided process. It's a bit like, it reminds me a little bit like Fred Johnson is a bit like the kind of people that leave Twitter and go to Blue Sky, right? Where it's like, yes, they get that Twitter is like a Nazi hellhole now, and they want to go somewhere else, but they're jumping into the same systemic problems. Whereas like the Fedi is like Dawes, which is like, no, we need a bit of chaos and a bit of like, we need a bit of aggression against the people that are trying to stamp us down a little bit. And I know that aggression isn't like everyone's cup of tea, but like sometimes you need to just and be a bit weird.
I think it's a bang on metaphor. I think that's spot on.
So that's, I mean, yeah. So like, yeah, Fred Johnson's Blue Sky, basically, which is like, you know, it's a well-meaning, but like the thing that caused.
And he's a good man. He's a good, honourable, noble, generous. You know, like he's a good person. He just doesn't quite get it.
Or
has a different idea, to put it more.
Has a different, an old-fashioned idea. Imperialistic idea, or oh my god! Sorry, I've suddenly turned you turned on Fred Johnson now, because I do like him. Like, he's nice.
Yeah. Oh, I like him a great. Yeah, he's a good character. I enjoy him as a character, and he seems like a good person. Yeah.
But he does have. Yeah, he just can't shake where he comes from.
As well as being, and I think this matters, as well as being an earther, he's also military.
Yes,
that's hierarchical,
and you know,
and arguably that might be the thing
that might be the deciding thing.
Outside of Earth seems to be seen as a military power before anything else, in the same way that America is often seen outside of America as a military power for good reason, right? Like, I'm sure
what else does America do in the world apart from
spend all its money on guns?
Forces everybody to use its currency and bombs you if you don't like that.
Yep, pretty much. And sell guns to Mexicans. Apparently,
apologies to everybody else in America and North America. We are talking about the United States of America.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, we are, of course. I didn't expect
us to get. We squeezed an awful lot out of that final scene again. I thought we were finished, but it was like,
a lot happens in that kind of final scene.
It's important.
It's an interesting episode. We did say there was a lot of momentum to it, and there is not that much. I mean, there's an uprising on the station. There's the whole Ganymede, killing the inners, and you know, on the refugee ship. There's a lot of actiony things happen, but it is all about getting to the. The Rocinante. I mean, it is the Rocinante's the centre of everything for the viewer as well as the show. And it is, that's where the momentum is. It's all the politics and everything all leads to the Rocinante going off to do something else. Going off on another mission, if you like, you know.
They're off on another adventure.
Well, they've gone back to the inn to pick up another quest. They resupply.
That's it. Yeah. Well, that's then, it. That's what that's what Tyco Station is. It's another. It's another in or Starbase or.
But they're off. They're off on the next quest now. They're going to come back with three wolf pelts.
Well, are they going to come back? Because it doesn't seem like they're welcome back.
Well, I mean, but also Holden's of the opinion that if they do come back, that Fred won't be in charge. So.
Yeah, or maybe they go to series, because like, I think the doors leave the door open for Holden and that lot. Because
how do you mean?
Well, he's sort of basically what he says, what he's essentially saying is if you don't come back with the proto molecule,
No, I'm talking about doors though.
I thought you meant Fred.
With doors and Holden, Holden was pretty hostile to doors, but it seems at this stage. Holden's pretty hostile to everyone. Like he's spiraling.
Going through a bit of
I think everybody in the Rocinante is a bit.
A little bit, yeah. Well, more than a little bit, really. Mm. Yeah. But I think once they get on an adventure and start working as a family again,
maybe it'll resolve all that.
Yeah. Maybe Prax will bring them all together in a nice.
Alex will make them a nice lasagna.
That didn't look like a nice lasagna. That looked dry as hell.
Lasagna's not a very nice pasta anyway, let's be honest. I'm not a fan of lasagna. I don't like mince in that format.
I don't particularly like mince, but I do like a lasagna.
There's many other things you can put in.
I know. But
you can just skip the mince,
careful,
honestly.
Wait a minute. Whoa. This is getting back to the macaroni cheese argument there. Unless it's macaroni and cheese, it's not macaroni cheese. But no, I know
Italians,
what you're saying.
Italians don't know how to do food. Italians don't know how to do food. I'm sorry, they just don't.
Unlike us British.
I will defend British cuisine. I fucking will.
Okay, so, other than a Sunday roast. Okay, I'm going English here. Other than a Sunday roast and a Cornish pasty.
Fried breakfast.
And an English breakfast.
A sausage roll.
Sausage roll. I'll give you sausage. I'm not sure that's uniquely British, but I'll give you sausage roll.
Hey, like the stuff the Italians say they invented. Come on.
Okay, but other than those four things, give me a good British cuisine. That
beans
we haven't
on
stolen.
Motherfucking toast.
Okay, beans. I'll give you beans on
toast. Cheese on toast. Let's go Welsh.
Yeah.
This is an unexpected turn.
I mean, do you need more? What about?
You did give me one, and he's given you a couple. You know?
Baked potato.
I don't think we can claim the baked potato. The idea of putting a potato in a fire.
What about some roasted cauliflower?
No.
Chestnuts. Oh my god, I can do some fucking great stuff.
I didn't eat chestnuts till quite late in life. Although, like I'd seen them on things, and I was like, they look delicious. And I tried a roasted chestnut. Absolutely fucking disgusting.
I love them raw. I just love chestnuts raw. Oh my god, that's a genuine reaction out of you.
Yeah, that was quite a thing from Drew there, wasn't it?
I don't like crunchy plants.
Love crunchy plants.
Are we going to get to
What do you call it? Celery now, are we?
Celery. I like celery, but raw. But here's the thing, raw right? Here's my James Holden opinion of the hour, right?
Yep.
I think food is best when it's bastardized, right? And the key example is the fusion of the curry in the UK, right? So obviously, most of the curries that we get on a UK menu. They were invented by Indian people in the UK.
I mean, often Pakistani.
Often Pakistani as well. These are meals. But a lot of my local curry houses, they'll use British vegetables grown locally, right?
I get what you're saying, but I don't think you can confidently claim that unless you've been to India and eaten Indian food, you know, or to an Indian household and had like Indian. You've got to be able to compare.
Yeah, I've got a mate who he went to Cambridge and he went to you. He would because he was a poor working class type, upper working class. Anyway, because he was a working class kid at Cambridge, his college was basically all the poor kids and the Asian kids. That was his, he had a lot of experience of Asian mum cooking.
Mm. I had an Indian friend in school and would go around to his house as often as possible.
To get the food.
And his mum would make me a chai tea mix.
You're disappearing, by the way, Drew. It doesn't matter at this end of the show. But
And I don't know what the fuck she put in it, but that would get me high. The chai tea mix would get me high.
I live with a few Indian people at university, and they cooked a fair bit, but they also use British vegetables, right?
It wasn't
as like menued as the restaurant stuff, if that makes sense. Like, it was just more like, you know, vibing and just like, they were sort of going with the flow a bit more, because, you know, they know all the spices, they balance the flavors, all that kind of stuff. It was a lot more chill. It was fucking brilliant 10 times out of 10. But yeah, like, I mean, so I do
agree that where cultures meet, at the meeting point of cultures, you tend to get particularly good food.
Yeah, you get interesting
I think that applies to America. Not that that was a happy meeting of cultures necessarily, but you know, some of the food in the South looks amazing. That's, you know, it's a bit Mexican, it's a bit, you know, African, it's a bit Caribbean, it's, you know,
I think that's when, like, yeah, getting nationalistic about food, I think, is always a bit silly, really, because it's like, also, most of our vegetables are not like native to the UK, right? And also, we've selectively bred
all of the early cultivated crops were Asian. I think and animals. I think the only like commonly farmed animal that is actually European is the cow. Everything else derives from Asian farming, and all of the like wheat, barley, rice, obviously. What are the other big? Obviously, maize was from the Americas, but yeah, they're all Asian.
Yeah, potatoes though, that's American.
Yeah, and tomatoes and chilies and chocolate.
So basically, Italian cuisine is built on a lie, because it's a very tomato-based cuisine. But like, what
noodles is a
Chinese
Eastern thing. Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck was Italian cuisine before, you know, we discovered America and brought tomato?
I couldn't. Medieval British food, right? Outside of meat. Was like what, turnips?
Well, we had the spice road. We like people have been trading with India since, you know, classical times. So we if you were wealthy, you had access to spices. But if you were poor,
spice must flow.
You were eating fucking dirt and twigs.
I mean, I like barbecue stuff. Like, I like charring stuff on a fire. Yeah. Doesn't that taste lovely?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, maybe I could live.
With, are we going to wrap up this show? And
okay. Well, so it's all
back
agreed
to the expanse.
All agreed that the best food is human food, not humans as in to eat humans, but as in like
Soylent Green.
Collective
cat food. Cat food is a close second. I enjoy cat food,
but collectively, more so than dog food.
Yeah,
dog food's rubbish.
Yeah, dog food.
Cats are a very much more choosy animal. Not necessarily choosy in not choosy, but particular because of their own, you know, their needs rather than their wants. You know.
Yeah, but holistically, I think the human race is great at food, and we should all work together and live happily ever after.
Yep.
The end.
All right, Holden, pick a side.